Welcome to the Northbound Wealth Podcast. All opinions expressed by Brent, his co-host, or his guests are solely his own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Northbound Wealth Management, LLC. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended as personalized recommendations or fiduciary advice. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for any investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice, or as a solicitation to offer or to buy any securities. Clients of Northbound Wealth Management, LLC, may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Testing, testing, 1, 2. Testing, testing, 1, 2. Testing, 1, 2. Testing, testing, 1, 2. Hello, everyone. This is Brent Foster. This is your weekly market insights with Northbound Wealth Management. Markets react to White House tariffs. The S&P 500 lost 9.1% this week. That was a review of last week amid worries about the impact of U.S. President Donald Trump's reciprocal tariffs on global economic growth and inflation. The S&P 500 ended Friday session at 5,074 after falling 5.8% in March. Its first quarter drop is now at 4.6%, and the index is down 13.7% since the start of the year. The U.S. imposed 10% blanket tariffs on all countries that take effect Saturday, and additional duties on specific trading partners, including China and Japan. Tariffs on Canada and Mexico, the U.S. largest trading partners, had previously been announced. Chinese goods imported into the U.S. will face a 54% tariff rate starting April 9th. Actually, what I just learned is it looks like it'll be 104% tariff in total on China, probably starting this morning, given that I'm releasing this on Wednesday after the 12 o'clock deadline last night. China plans to impose an extra 34% tariff on U.S. goods starting April 10th. I'll correct that, and I think they updated that to 84%. So it's definitely ramping up on the tariff front. The escalating trade war has raised concerns about a possible global recession. Beijing will also limit exports of key rare earth metals and placed 11 U.S. companies on an unreliable entity list. Data this week showed the U.S. goods and services deficit narrowed more than projected in February to $122.7 billion. According to the U.S. Census Bureau and Bureau of Economic Analysis, the deficit declined $8 billion from $130.7 billion a month earlier. The March employment report showed non-farm payrolls rose by 228,000, well above the 140,000 jobs increase expected in survey compiled by Bloomberg. However, February payrolls had a downward revision of 117,000 increase, and January payrolls were revised down to 111,000 increase for a net downward revision of 48,000 jobs. The unemployment rate rose to 4.2% in March from 4.1%, so it ticked up in February compared with a 4.1% rate expected, so it's kind of in line. All sectors of the S&P 500 were in the red. Energy and the largest energy had the largest percentage drop, sliding 14%, followed by 11% decline in technology, 10% loss in financials, and a 9.4% decrease in industrials. And in energy, APA was down 27%. Capital One adjusted its price target on the company's stock to $35 from $38 and kept an overweight rating on it. Wolf Research also reduced its price target on APA to $36 from $40 and kept an outperform rating on it. Among tech stocks, Micron Technology fell 26%. Investors worry that U.S. grant recipients in the microchip industry, including Taiwan Semiconductors, Intel, Micron, Global Foundries, and Texas Instruments, face pressure to expand domestic operations or risk losing funding. KKR was among those hit hardest in the financial sector, falling 19%. The private equity firm, along with EQT and FTV Capital, led a $500 million funding of ReliaQuest. The fresh capital will finance the expansion of AI-powered cybersecurity automation platform and drive international growth, ReliaQuest said. Next week, the Q1 reporting season will kick off with reports expected from companies including the banks, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Progressive, BlackRock, Constellation Brands, and Delta Airlines. That starts actually in a couple days on Friday. Economic data will include February's consumer credit report and March's consumer and producer price indexes. And as a review, the NASDAQ year to date is that this is a trailing number, it's down 14.14%. S&P 500 is down 7.94%. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 4.30%. And MSCI EAFE, which tracks over to overseas developed markets, is actually up 7.56%. That was through Friday's close. We've had a couple trading days here into the week, and it's certainly looking a little worse than that, but somewhat orderly, up and down. 10-year Treasury note is last week was at 4.01%, down significantly over the past 1 year and 3 months. Looks like we are down 6.96% from a year ago, 12.83% to the downside 3 months ago. So as you can see, as equity markets have sold off, the Treasury has also come down as well. And sitting around 4%, I'm sure that people would like to see that a little bit below that, given what's gone on. All right, Powell's speech. So Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell gave a previously scheduled and much anticipated speech on Friday. He explained the labor market is in good shape and is and not a significant source of inflation. Longer-term inflation expectations are well anchored and consistent with our 2% inflation goal, despite higher expectations for inflation over the short term. Regarding consumer sentiment, while consumers may not feel great about the economy right now, they still keep on spending. He added that the same happened during the pandemic. The Fed's policy stance is well positioned to wait for greater clarity. Sounds like everybody else at this point, CEOs and executives of Fortune 500 companies, as well as just mid and small sized companies. It seems like we're all doing that, especially in the financial industry, as well as we try to manage and navigate through trading around these tariffs and what's going to happen. So he also said on the likely effects of trade and fiscal policy, for example, before considering any changes in monetary policy. So it sounds like they're not going to be quick to change and adjust. They're going to wait and see and then make adjustments accordingly. So this week, consumer credit, the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index, Treasury buybacks, the FOMC minutes are released, 10-year Treasury note auction, wholesale inventories Thursday, consumer price index is going to be released, jobless claims, the monthly federal budget, and then Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee and Dallas Fed President Lori Logan speak. Friday, producer price index, consumer sentiment, and the New York Fed President John Williams speak. So the Fed heads are going to continue to talk. And we've already gone over the notable companies reporting earnings. And our tax tip of the week, 2 education credits are available to American taxpayers, the American Opportunity Tax Credit, or the AOTC, and the Lifetime Learning Credit, LLC. The IRS has lots of information about these 2 credits on their site, but here are some highlights that you might find helpful. The AOTC is allowed for expenses for course-related books, supplies, and equipment not necessarily paid to the educational institution, but needed for attendance. The AOTC is limited to 4 years, but the LLC can be claimed for as many years as you'd like. To claim either credit, use Form 8863. The AOTC is worth up to $2,500. Your modified adjusted gross income must be $80,000 or less to claim the full credit. Again, this information is not a substitute for individualized tax advice. Please discuss your specific tax issues with a qualified tax professional. And this tip was adapted from IRS.gov. All right. Stay tuned for the next segment. Got a good show for you. Today is April 9th, and I'm watching on the Bloomberg Treasury Secretary Bessent speaking at the White House that that there's breaking news that Trump announces a 90-day tariff pause for at least some countries. So non-retaliating countries, that is. The stock market response is the S&P immediately jumped 7%. The Dow's up 5 to 6%. The NASDAQ's up over 8% just on that news, which broke at like approximately 1:30 Eastern time on April 9th. So I just so happened to be able to sneak this breaking news headline in because I did talk about tariffs a little bit and about market levels. And Trump did text or tweet or something earlier today, like in the morning, saying that today would be a good day to buy, which I find comical because he releases that. And then later, this is announced by Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. So anyway, it tells you that he's got some control over what he's doing and how he's doing it. He knows he's responsible kind of for this decline in the equity markets and the response to it. So it sounds like there's a little more order going to this as of today. And this is a developing story, so we'll keep bringing it to you every week as best we can. All right, stay tuned for the next segment. Hello, everyone. This is the Technical Analysis Spotlight. I just want to talk about the S&P 500 and where things were and where they are today. So on February 19th, we had hit all-time highs in the S&P 500, around 6,100, a little above that. And today we are trading around 49.85 and change. We've traded a little lower in early hours trade today, but all of this has to do with the approach that the Trump administration took on trade and tariffs and reciprocal tariffs, retaliation tariffs, all kinds of tariff talk. And apparently we'll just hunker down and kind of weather this storm. The underlying fundamentals of the economy are still strong and the economic data still looks good and the consumer is still in good shape despite higher interest rates and the Fed kind of starting to lower interest rates, but now holding steady given the potential impact of tariffs and this trade war and tariff war that's going on and trying to right size the American ship. If you picture us as America economically, we have massive amounts of debt that we need to pay off. We have huge trade deficits with other nations, and the Trump administration is trying to right-size the ship so that we don't literally sink into bankruptcy and have major problems later down the road. We've kicked the can down the road for many decades, not to get into politics or any of that. But there's been an awful lot of spending, massive bloating in the government. We're still surviving as a nation, that type of thing. But we don't need to just survive. We need to we need to do better than what we've been doing. And I think that was pretty clear after the last administration and the changeover and who America voted for in this new shift of power and administration. So. Looking at the administration and the team that they seem to have compiled around them, I think that they are trying to make America a better place economically and have a better future for our kids and grandkids. So I commend them for going at this kind of in the way that they are, but not necessarily how they communicate. So they could do much better there in letting the markets know and corporate America know and the CEOs out there know how to navigate this environment. We'll just see over the next coming weeks and months how things progress. And here at Northbound, we are going to be following and tracking it. All right, moving on into some technical indicators. And I've talked about this on past podcasts. I like to look at the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE, McKellen Summation Index Ratio Adjusted. And with multiple studies like full stochastics, and volume and all kinds of stuff overlaid with the S&P 500. And the indicators are definitely on the oscillation front in the correction territory in an oversold condition. And they're kind of staying there and they've been there for a week or two, maybe three. And I'm just looking at a one-year chart daily on those. And so I'm going to look up another one As I shift over, indicator 4 is looking like we're almost to zeros on it. It updates every Tuesday. So we're almost there towards the end of this particular selling cycle over sold condition. Now, if I look at the S&P 500, it looks like an ABC correction to me, pretty substantial, but still in bull market territory. There's been some technical damage wiping out the summer lows of 2024, and we've wiped out the spring lows of 2024 as well. So April and in August, I don't know if anyone recalls last year, we had a 10% correction last summer, the unwind of the carry trade of the won. So that happened. We forget because the market was up 25% last year. But if you look at the November lows of 2023, literally stopped on a dime at 4,100 on the S&P. From November of 2023, we ripped. I mean, there were some pullbacks and corrections within it, but we basically went from 4,100 all the way up to February of 60, a little over 6,100. So that's a 2,000 point move. A 50% retracement from 4,100 to 6,100, 50% retracement puts us in the camp of 5,100 for a 50% retracement. So we're below that at this point. It looks like the MACD is at extreme conditions. It looks like the RSIs or relative strength indicators are at extreme oversold conditions. And it looks like also that the S&P 500 bullish percent index is, I mean, I'm looking back over since 2005 to now, there's only been like 1, 2, 3 times that it's been this bearish. It's pretty substantial. So if you have cash to deploy, if you're looking at long-term entry points, as far as I think equities are, S&P 500 is concerned, this would potentially be one of those times. I look at the VIX now. Let's jump over to it. So if I go back 20 years, the VIX hitting 60, COVID, you hit 90. There was a spike of the yuan unwind trade that hit 65. So if you go back, only like a couple other times that it hit that, and one being during 2008. So it's an extremely scary time for people. The fear gauge is also called the VIX. People are afraid of how this is going to play out and what's going to happen. But I would say longer term, if you're an S&P investor and you're sitting on the sideline with a bunch of cash and not knowing what to do, not saying that you sold the market to go to cash and then to look to re-enter, but it's not a bad time. Now on the monthly chart, over the past 20 years since 2005, I'm looking at the RSI on it, and we're sitting at the midline. So we were overbought when, on the monthly chart on the S&P 500, once we hit all-time highs, we were overbought. There was a negative divergence at that point, and then we really sold off hard. Now we're at the mid-level, which is 50. We're below that, and usually a great buying opportunity would be if it's around this level. I'm looking back over the past, 20 years, and over the last 20 years, this monthly chart in RSI with the volume and everything articulated, there are very few times that you get this low on the oscillator at below 50. The only time that it hit 30 in the last 20 years on that oscillator was back during the great financial crisis, 2008, 2009. It takes a lot for the market to have to get down to that point. Not saying that that couldn't happen, but meaning that the oscillator gets down to 30 or below, but usually, when it's when it's sitting around 25, that 25 to 40, that's not a bad place to enter. Anyway, food for thought as you think about things. Let's see, the S&P 500% of stocks above their 50-day moving average. It's an index. I've got an oscillator RSI. It's definitely oversold condition. The oscillator's below 30. There's only a few times, let's see, only what, two times in the last year that's happened. If I back out 10 years, there's plenty of times, but the, as a reading though, sitting at five, gosh, there really is like one, two, three times that it's that low in the past 10 years. Let me go back 20. Let's see here. One, two, three, four, like four times in the last 20 years that that's actually been hit. So $SPXA50R, looking at stockcharts.com, ycharts.com, looking at these things. There's so many things to look at. You could see the equity put call ratio. People are putting protection on, taking it off, but and protection is up. You see the market start to rally when they start to take protection off. So a lot of protection. And there was a crossover that doesn't happen very often on that particular chart. It's the $CPCE, or the CBOE options equity put call ratio EOD index. Okay, so just looking at these things, I know this doesn't all make sense to everybody out there, but if you're a chartist or technical person and you really have a chart pack, now's the time to be looking at it. Look at entry points, things like that. But if you're already in it and the market declines, one of the best things you can do is reevaluate your budget, your cash flows from a macro perspective, and then look at what you own, know what you own, know what kind of companies you own, stocks, the ETFs or exchanges, what your goal, review some of your goals and objectives, make sure everything's in line, do a little cash flow planning, and then see if there's extra cash flow potentially to add into the market, because it's hard to go wrong, especially when you're closer to the bottom than not, to deploy capital for a long-term growth trade. So not bad. If you're already in it, hang on, know what you own. If you need to make adjustments, make adjustments, potentially make adjustments. Have a plan for adjusting your strategy if we end up rolling into a recession or bear market. So far, this is so quick and so fast, you may not have time. It's going to be one of those things that we'll have to wait and see for the majority of people. And the steady hands prevail usually. Not selling is a lot of times one of the best moves you can make because the snapback might be just as quick as the decline was. So that rally or turn, once news cycle turns and corporations out there, CEOs know a particular playbook that the government is implementing and how to play by the rules, the new rules that are going to be implemented, that is going to help bring clarity to the markets, and less uncertainty is also very good for the markets. So hang in there, hang tough, like some people are saying, and steady hands prevail. It's stick to a great strategy. You'll achieve your goals over the long term, usually. So as a reminder, markets over time generally go up and to the right. The S&P 500 the last 40 years, 50 years, is annualized around 10% a year. So, and you can do better if you buy it points where it's down relative to the past. So we'll see. And I hope this has been helpful. I hope that you guys are encouraged by it. Have a disciplined strategy. Work your financial professionals. If you have questions, reach out to Northbound Wealth Management, 317-399-1107. So good health is the foundation for everything, our careers, our families, and our financial goals we work so hard to pursue. This week marks the 30th anniversary of the National Public Health Week. Financial wellness and physical well-being go hand in hand. A strong financial strategy can include access to quality health care, managing stress, and the freedom to focus on what matters most. Likewise, good health can help us enjoy the future we're building. This week, we recognize the incredible progress made in public health over the past three decades and appreciate the professionals dedicated to improving health outcomes in our communities. because at the end of the day, wealth means little without health. In this segment, are your most important accounts protected? According to a 2024 article in the Wall Street Journal, the three accounts that you need strongest passwords for are, number one, your email, the gateway to everything. A compromised email can reset passwords for all your other accounts. Number two, financial accounts. Direct access to your money, banking, and investment accounts must have the strongest security measures. Number three, password manager. It's the vault that protects all your other logins. If it's hacked, every stored password could be at risk. Digital security plays a role in your overall financial well-being. One weak password can be all that it takes for a hacker to access your sensitive accounts. So use unique, complex passwords for critical accounts. Enable multi-factor authentication or MFA whenever possible. Stay on top of security updates and recovery settings. Financial strength isn't just about making smart investment decisions and developing strong digital habits. Take a moment to review your passwords. Your security is only as strong as your weakest link. So April isn't just about filing taxes. It's also Financial Literacy Month, a perfect opportunity to reflect on your financial habits, expand your knowledge, and take meaningful steps towards improving your financial well-being. Whether building your first budget, preparing for retirement, or navigating the complexities of paying for college, financial literacy is the foundation for making confident, informed decisions. It's important to remember that financial literacy isn't something you master once. It's a lifelong journey of adapting, learning, and growing as your circumstances and goals evolve. Here are some practical steps you can take today to strengthen your financial foundation. Lessons from tax season, turning insights into action. Tax season may not be everyone's favorite time of year. It certainly isn't mine, but it does have a way of sharpening our focus on finances and decisions over the past year. It's also an opportunity to reflect and identify changes that can improve your financial situation and potentially your tax outcomes for the year ahead. So, reflect on your tax return. As you gather your records to share with your tax professional, it's a good time to identify patterns in your income, expenses, and deductions. Determining how much is coming in versus how much is going out is the first step in creating a realistic budget. Spotting overspending or missed opportunities may help you modify your behavior and adopt better financial habits that could help benefit your financial health in the long term. It's also worth reviewing your tax withholdings to see if they align with your current situation. Common gaps in record keeping. If tax time is always a last-minute scramble for documents, receipts, and other paperwork, learn from this year's experience and commit to being better prepared for next year. A good tax document organization system can help you track income, deductions, and expenses year-round. Being organized can make it easier to calculate taxes accurately, claim deductions, and make smart financial choices. Having disorganized tax documents can result in issues like late filings, missed deductions, and lost records. Missing deadlines could mean extra fees. Overlooking deductions could result in missed opportunities, and lost records could have multiple negative ramifications. For physical paperwork, consider setting up folders or binders for different types of documents. Think of separate folders for personal bank statements, medical records, and investment statements. Arrange papers in chronological order or by categories inside these folders so that you can easily find them. Label folders clearly and keep them in a filing cabinet or a fireproof box. In today's world, you may want to go digital. Many financial institutions send tax documents electronically. Download them and save them to a digital folder. For physical documents, scan them and save them to the same folder. Arrange these digital files in folders and subfolders on your computer or an external hard drive, just like you would with paper copies. Many financial professionals offer clients access to a secure digital vault. These tools can help you store and organize your financial documents so they are accessible when needed. Whichever method you choose, regularly backing up your digital files can help avoid any potential data loss. These record-keeping ideas are not a replacement for real-life advice. We would encourage you to speak with your tax, legal, and accounting professionals before modifying your record-keeping strategy using your tax refunds. So, according to IRS data from February 2024, the average tax refund amount was $1,395 in 2024, down nearly 29% from the $1,963 the previous year. Of course, this is just an average, and your refund may be higher or lower or non-existent if you owe the government money. If you receive a tax refund, here are a few ways that you may want to put it to use. Build your emergency fund. So an emergency fund is one way to help manage unexpected expenses or layoffs. If you can't put away 3 to 6 months of expenses in your savings with your regular paychecks, your tax refund can be used to boost that number. Pay down high interest debt. If you carry a balance on credit cards or other high interest debt, consider paying down that balance and free up your budget. Tackle maintenance costs if you've been postponing. So, have you postponed car issues, appliance problems, or home repairs because of costs? Consider using extra cash from a refund to address these needs before they get worse and potentially more expensive to fix later. Better yourself. You could use your tax refund to invest in yourself. Ideas could include taking a course at a local college, getting a certification that would help improve your prospects, or finally starting that side hustle you've been thinking about. Invest extra cash. I like this one. If you receive a larger refund, you may want to work with your financial professional to invest that money, specifically when the equity markets are down. Spring clean your financial house, declutter and organize. Financial wellness includes taking steps to declutter and organize your financial life. Many tools and resources make spring cleaning your financial house more manageable and efficient. Here are a few areas you can focus on. Digital financial organization. So moving your financial life online has become the preferred method for many. It can be more convenient while helping to manage the clutter of physical mail and stacks of paper on your kitchen counter. Online bill pay. Digital account statements and electronic documents are commonplace. While streamlined digital access has many benefits, one downside is the proliferation of passwords you need to remember. Technology can also help us with this. Password managers are available online to help you keep track of your complex and varied passwords for each account. While doing your financial spring cleaning, it's also a good time to review and update those auto payments if necessary. Fraud protection checkup. Spring is also a good time to review the security of your identity and personal data, especially when using online accounts. Security can be a real problem. In 2024, Federal Trade Commission, FTC, study showed that consumers reported losing more than $10 billion to fraud in 2023, marking the first time that fraud losses have reached that benchmark. This statistic marks a 14% increase over reported losses in 2022. To help protect yourself, consider monitoring your financial accounts regularly for suspicious activity, especially during tax season. You can attempt to enhance your online security to protect sensitive information by using strong, unique passwords, enabling multi-factor authentication, and regularly changing passwords. Don't let your mail sit in uncollected status for too long. A low-tech way criminals can steal your identity is to simply take bank or credit card statements, utility bills, healthcare or tax forms, or pre-approved credit card offers out of your mailbox. As you declutter, consider buying a household shredder and destroying sensitive paperwork containing personally identifiable information. Create different passwords for your accounts. According to the FTC study, secure passwords tend to be longer, more complex, and unique. Many people use the same password for multiple accounts, which can be problematic. You should consider creating different passwords for various accounts and avoid using information related to your identity, such as your pet's name, your birthday, your initials, or parts of your name. The FBI and National Institute of Standards and Technology have issued guidelines stating that passwords should consist of at least 15 characters because these are more difficult for a computer program or hacker to crack. Regarding security questions, The FTC's guidelines suggest that only you can answer questions. Avoid information that could be available online, such as your zip code, city of birth, or mother's maiden name. Account consideration. Streamlining your financial life can include combining old and forgotten retirement accounts. Accounting for all your assets and having them in one place can help you and your financial professional develop more comprehensive investment and retirement income strategies. Surprisingly, losing track of an old retirement account happens more often than you might think. As of May 2023, there were over 29 million left behind or forgotten retirement accounts in the U.S., holding nearly $1.65 trillion in assets. Whether or not the balance of a forgotten account is large, this can be quote-unquote found money. Also, remember to look for other long dormant accounts that can be consolidated and inactive or redundant credit cards that can be canceled. Beneficiary and insurance checkup. Use this annual opportunity to update your beneficiaries on policies and retirement accounts. Not reviewing your beneficiaries on retirement accounts and other key contracts and policies can result in unintended consequences. Typically, a beneficiary designation overrides any instructions detailed in a will. For example, if you leave everything to your spouse in your will, if your children are named beneficiaries on your retirement accounts at your passing, the retirement account designation might supersede anything written in your will. As a result, the money in that account could be transferred to your children instead of your spouse. Beneficiaries listed on an account opened long ago may not reflect your current circumstances and may no longer match your estate goals. This can be true in the case of a divorce, the birth of a child, or the death of a beneficiary. So including a review as part of your spring cleaning is good. Building better money habits. Small changes make big impacts. So when getting your financial house in order, even minor changes consistently applied over time can have an impact. Some ideas can be implemented independently, while a financial professional might be able to help you with others. Simplify spending tracking. So creating a budget, sticking to it, is an important step in taking control of your finances. You can determine your cash flow, track expenditures, and account for assets and liabilities on an old school spreadsheet or with digital tools. If you want to go high tech, there are many budgeting apps you may want to consider. Here are a few that may be of interest. The YNAB is focused on proactive budgeting, helping users keep track of their finances. It might be someone who wants to track spending in real time and manage money more intentionally. Some of the features are real-time tracking of credit card spending, debt payoff ideas, and goal setting. The ideal user is someone who wants a detailed control over their budget. The platforms are iOS, Android, and the web. Pocket Guard. Overview of Pocket Guard is designed to help users see their disposable income after accounting for bills and savings goals. It connects to bank accounts and credit cards to track real-time spending. Features are budgeting, spending insights, savings goals, debt payoff ideas. The ideal user is someone who wants a simple way to see what's safe to spend. Okay. Platform, iOS, Android, and web. Spendy. Spendy is a simple, user-friendly app that allows manual entry or syncing with bank accounts and credit cards. It offers an easy-to-use interface for tracking spending by category. Some of the features are budgeting, spending, tracking, and expense categorization. The ideal user is someone who wants a visually appealing, straightforward app. The platform is iOS, Android, and the web. Good Budget. Overview would be this app uses the envelope budgeting method where you assign money into different envelopes for each spending category. It helps users stay mindful about their spending without linking to bank accounts. Features are envelope budgeting, spending tracking, and reports. The ideal user is someone who prefers manual entry and a simple, disciplined approach to budgeting. The platform is iOS and Android. You can always use Rocket Money as well, which I like for identifying subscriptions throughout your budget where there might be duplications and things like that, where it can help you kind of manage all those subscriptions you have out there to have a more mindful budget and disciplined budget. All right, automate savings. Many people struggle to prioritize savings and building an emergency fund, but automation can help. Setting and forgetting your savings strategy can help as you tuck away a bit of your monthly income without remembering to make the transfers. Not only does automation remove the mental barrier of having to remove money from one account to another, but you may also be more likely to stick to the pattern when you don't have to remember to make the transfer. And that leads us to automate your investing. So just like with savings, automating investing can make it easy and efficient to build a nest egg for retirement, put assets aside to cover educational costs, or tackle other goals. Working with your financial professional, you can determine what works best for you, your timeline, and your risk tolerance. Automatic investing can also help you practice dollar cost averaging, or DCA. However, DCA does not protect against loss in a declining market or guarantee profit in a rising market, but it does help with the discipline. Specifically, DCA, or dollar cost averaging, is the process of investing in a fixed amount of money in an investment vehicle on a regular intervals, so usually monthly for an extended period of time, regardless of price. Investors should evaluate their financial ability to continue making purchases through periods of declining and rising prices. The returns and principal values of stock prices will fluctuate as market conditions change. Shares, when sold, may be worth more or less than the original cost. But reviewing your investment strategy. Spring may also be a good time to speak with your financial professionals about your current financial strategy. Working with a professional, you can determine your investment portfolio needs to be rebalanced due to market gains or losses, whether changes to your goals or timeframes require tweaks to your strategy, or whether your overall financial situation has changed. Family money talks, building financial confidence at home. So, financial literacy is something that the entire family can benefit from. While talking about money can be uncomfortable for some, ignoring the family's financial issues will not make them go away. The more you normalize financial conversations, the easier it is for you to talk about problems if they arise, or eventual estate strategy discussions as you get older, like transitioning your businesses or your finances or investments and assets to your kids or grandkids. Partners, so married couples and partners need to communicate. Tensions can build when partners do not manage finances well, struggle to talk about money, or aren't honest about spending. In some cases, ongoing tensions leads to separation or divorce. A 2024 Fidelity Couples and Money survey found that 45% of partners said they argue about money sometimes, and 1 in 4 couples say money is their top relationship challenge. Spring can be a good time for couples to discuss finances. When you discuss money more consistently, your conversations will get easier and feel more normal. Couples may also want to meet with an objective third-party financial professional who can facilitate the conversation and help develop a comprehensive financial strategy. Children of all ages need exposure to financial literacy concepts. If you have children, you might want them to get involved in age-appropriate family discussions about financial literacy and money matters. Younger children can be introduced to financial concepts like earning an allowance through chores, saving money to pay for things that they want, and learning that money has value. Teenagers can be taught the importance of working a part-time job to earn money while learning about budgeting, credit basics, and the deferred gratification of saving for larger goals and having to pay for taxes, right? It might be appropriate to include adult children in estate strategy discussions and know where your important documents are kept and your healthcare directives. Children learn by example, so if you demonstrate good money behaviors like saving, budgeting, and investing, you can start the process of creating a strong financial foundation for your children. You can also create teaching moments by involving children in shopping decisions or charitable donations. These real-life scenarios can go a long way towards explaining financial concepts. 30-day financial refresh challenge. Okay, so to help manage financial stress, you may want to tackle one of your financial spring cleaning tasks once per week so they don't become overwhelming. Right? Take a bigger strategy and break it down into weekly instruments or weekly tasks. But remember, financial literacy and health is a continuous process. So starting small and staying consistent may be the best way. Here are a few ideas that may help you jumpstart the exercise for the month. So action steps for the next 30 days. Week one, review your tax return and set one financial goal. Week two, organize digital and physical financial documents. Week three, create a written or digital budget. Week four, have a money talk with family or review investment strategy. Working with a financial professional. So taking control of your finances can feel overwhelming, but small, consistent steps can make a big difference over time. Whether you're organizing your financial documents, learning more about budgeting, preparing for major life events, or reviewing your long-term goals, each action strengthens your financial foundation and can build your confidence. So when you're ready to take the next step, we're here to guide you, from helping you create a comprehensive financial strategy to helping you leverage tools like secure digital vaults or educational resources. Northbound Wealth Management is committed to empowering you with the knowledge and strategies you need to pursue your goals. Financial literacy isn't just about knowledge. It's about having the proper support to make informed decisions for your financial future. Let us help you turn your goals into a strategy. Thanks for listening this week to the Northbound Wealth Podcast, and stay tuned for the next one released next week. Have a great weekend.
Whether you're just getting started as an investor or you're managing a multi-million-dollar portfolio, Northbound Wealth Management has the solution for you. It all starts with building the right financial plan. To speak with a financial planner today, visit northboundwealth.com. Don't forget to check us out on youtube.com at Northbound Wealth. And make sure to leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting app. Thank you for listening.